Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. And this episode, this time out, I'm reviewing the second book in what I thought was a trilogy of fantasy books by Scott Lynch. It's called the Gentleman Bastards Trilogy, but it's not a trilogy, it's a series. The first book was The Lies of Locke Lamora, which I read back in 2010. I'm a little bit behind in catching up with the second book in this, because this book, I think, came out in, like, 2008. And the third book in the series is only just coming out now. So the first book was, I think, in 2006. No, the first book was in 2006, yeah, it says here. And then the second book, Red Sea Under Red Skies, which is the book I'm reading now, I'm going to be reviewing now, is in 2007. And The Republic of Thieves is coming out in 2013. I think it's just come out now. People are reading it at the moment. I thought, well, you know, I'll catch up. I'll be one book behind. And if, you know, The Republic of Thieves, this third book in this trilogy, gets good reviews, it means I'm in a good position to finish it off. Because I heard Red Seas Under Red Skies wasn't quite as good as The Lies of Locke Lamora. And then, of course, this morning, after reading the book, or finishing the book as an audiobook yesterday, I check out Wikipedia just to make sure I can, you know, get some of the names right and things. And it says here, Red Seas Under Red Skies page is the second novel of a projected 7 in Scott Lynch's Gentleman Bastard series. Now, I was just wondering, why do you go from like a standalone novel, yeah, okay, and then you get a trilogy, that's the next thing, or why is it after a trilogy, why is the next like round number of fantasy novels 7 or 10 or 12? I mean, why so many books? why do I have to wait that long to get the answers to my questions? That you pose all these questions like the first chapter of the first book, and it's like, aha, but it will take you 20 years to learn the thing. So yeah, it goes Lies of Locke Lamora, 2006, Red Sea Under Red Skies, 2007, Republic of Thieves, 2013, and then The Thorn of Emberlane, The Ministry of Necessity, The Mage and the Master Spy, and Inherit the Night. I'm like, well, how, like, what? Anyway, so that was one disappointment that I have in this book, that I thought it was going to be the middle book of a trilogy, and it turns out it's the second book of a septology. I don't know what the word is going to be for that one. Anyway, so yeah, I heard this book wasn't as good as the first book, the first novel in the series, but I remembered the good stuff about that novel. I remember, oh, there's interesting characters and it's lots of fun. It's like Ocean's 11 in a shark infested Venice, you know, with the underworld maneuverings and politics and heists and death and prostitutes and, you know, just pretty good, you know, fantasy stuff, fluffy. They're quite a fluffy book, not a whole lot going on except, you know, kind of at this plot level. But I remembered reviewing it quite well, I guess. Of course, until I just checked out. I don't know why I do this. I do the research about the book I'm reading after I finish the book, but I checked back and I gave that one 3 stars. And that kind of explains, and now after doing that and reading this book, I remember the stuff that I didn't like of that first book. So the setup for this book is, yeah, there's two characters. There's Jean and Locke, who finished the last book, and it's kind of a bit of a disaster, and they leave Camor, where all the action takes place, in The Lies of Locke Lamora. So Locke and Jean go, and they've got to go and set up a new life for themselves. They want to get out of that city. They want to do new stuff in a different city. So yeah, that's what we kind of get here. And what I really liked about the start of this book is that they have to kind of deal with, like, the first few chapters is Locke dealing, Locke and Jean both dealing with like the fallout from the previous book. Like, Locke is really injured and he has to get better, and people have died and they've got to get over that, and there's weird stuff going on with the relationship together, and they've got to get, like, work that out. And, you know, Jean is trying to, you know, come out from under the shadow of Locke a bit, and they've got to work that out, and who's going to be in charge and who's doing what. And there's, you know, some interesting stuff there. And I thought, oh, this is great. It's really tight. It's really just carrying straight on from the first book. So all of these things, like these different characters, you know, what's gonna, you know, we're going to get all those bits filled in. The first book I actually really enjoyed because there was, you know, there was these different interludes. Certainly in the first part of the book, there's like these backstory interludes, and it says, and now here's the backstory of Jean, and we get a bit of that. And here's a bit of the backstory of this person. And here's a bit of the backstory of Locke from when he was younger. And the first interlude, I remember because I just listened back to the podcast that I did about the lives of Locke Lamara, and the first interlude was the kid who stole too much. And then he goes from a brat kid, orphan 6 year old, into the leader of the Gentleman Bastards. And what I felt was missing from that first book was that section in like of his teenage years where he goes from being a brat little kid to the leader of the Gentleman Bastards. And that's just missing from the first book. And I thought, now we're gonna get it. And also there's like, I sent, there's a line where I sent Sabatha off to the place I send Sabatha, this mysterious, vague, missing character called, this redheaded character called Sabatha. And she's the love of Locke's life, and he's the reason why she is the reason why Locke never gets into any other love interest, and why he's quite a boring character as in terms of interaction with female characters, because he's always pining after Sabbath. And I was like, and now we're gonna get that in this book, and no. So like, even though there's these interludes of Locke getting over his injuries and deaths and stuff like that. And there's interludes about them setting up the next big Ocean's 11 job, this heist that they're going to do, you know, when they're going to, you know, knock over this casino vault. But there's no interludes about any character development from before the end of the previous book. What I mean by that is that there's this big section of Locke's life from when he's like 10 years old until he's, you know, 20 years old or 18 years old or however old he is in the first book. Like, how did he become the leader of the Gentleman Bastards? But the point is that I kind of just don't care anymore, because the person who Locke is by the start of this book is a different person than he was from when he first took over as the leader of the Gentleman Bastards. And the character he is at the end of this book, the end of Red Seas Under Red Skies, is again completely different from that character. Like, he's in charge of different people, there's a different cast of characters, the people who he's interacting with, he's in a different city. Nothing that could have happened to him in Camor from the age of 10 to 18 or 10 to 15 or however, you know, old he was when he, you know, when he made that transition to brat kid to leader of the Gentleman, none of that actually matters anymore. And the only thing that does matter from that time is who is Sabatha. But then she's been out of the picture now for so long. She just doesn't turn up in this book. Maybe she does in the Republic of Thieves, which is a book which is coming out now, the third book in the 7-book series. But it's like, come on, either have Sabatha turn up or just ignore that part of his life. Just move on. Just admit that it's not coming back, because otherwise it feels like those questions that we have about Locke Lamora, who is meant to be the main character in this series, the questions about him are now that they just don't mean anything if you're not going to address them. Like, if the character is going to continue moving on, if he's going to have continued adventures, if he's going to meet new people and have new relationships and all of that, like, that's, you know, you've got to ignore the stuff or just now, like, discard it, not maybe not ignore it, but just let the character move on. Or you've got to make the character not move on and make it more important to the stories. Otherwise, you've got this pining over Sabatha and this guy who's just kind of in a holding pattern while he goes through these adventures and not moving on, purely for this secret Sabatha character who is so secret that when she goes somewhere, again, and this is what I said in the previous podcast about the previous book, I think episode 103, when I reviewed The Lies of Locke Lamora, I'm just like, well, you've either got to hint more about the story or leave it out, because it just feels like you don't know what's going on. I sent Sabatha off to the place I sent Sabatha. And that's kind of what the author is saying, not just change this old character. He says, and I send you off here and I send you off there, and I sent Sabatha off to the place I sent Sabatha. And when it's that vague, it just makes me feel like, hey, Scott Lynch just doesn't know where Sabatha is. And actually, it's just not important, except as a chain, as an anchor around Locke Lamora's neck to hold him back and stop him having any meaningful relationships with anyone except for his buddy Jean, because this is very much, you know, like a bromance kind of thing going on there. What else do I have here? So, yeah, this story starts off, and I quite, like I said, quite like the start of it, how it's getting over the Over this, and the front of the book, the front cover, they were getting over the last book, that's what I'm saying, the front cover of the book has ships on it, red seas under red skies. I'd heard it was a pirate adventure and things. I was like, okay, pirate adventure, I can do that. We've had a, you know, an Ocean's 11 heist kind of movie, I say movie, book, plus the political machinations and things. And I was like, okay, let's get on with these pirates. And the book begins, and they're on the ship, and I'm like, okay, here we go. And no, they just land and without any problems. And then, like, it turns out, like, the first third of this book, from 1% through to 33% of this book, I was just thinking, well, where are the pirates? And there was this Ocean's 11 kind of thing going on, plus the interludes, plus the backstories, and saying, okay, well, here we have an interlude about them setting up this job, and they're gonna, there's this casino, and they've got to get into this casino, and they're going to get into the vault of the casino. But then at some point I'm thinking, well, are they going to get into the vault of the casino? Because they seem to be talking about ropes and abseiling, and, or abseiling, as it's pronounced by the audiobook narrator here. Yeah, and I'm just thinking, well, okay, that's a... It doesn't sound like they're going for that. But anyway, a third of the book, that kind of stuff. And I was just thinking, all that time, I was thinking, where are the pirates? Then, a third of the book, after a third of the book, like 33%, suddenly... they meet this new character, and this, and the plot just comes to a grinding halt. And I was like, okay, pirates. This is where you're going to do. So they mentioned pirates. So all of the stuff that's been set up before, this Ocean's 11 heist casino thing, that's all going to be, you know, that's just put on hold. Literally just put on hold. They're just like, well, we can't do that. We're just going to have to wait now for at least the next 6 weeks before we go back to that. I'm like, 6 weeks? But that's where the plot is going. That's everything's going. You're going to get this haul. You're going to win. You're going to get your, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars or credits or whatever they call it. Solari, I think they call them in here. So you're going to get your thousands of gold solari. What? But, and we're just told straight away, okay, all of that stuff that they're doing, that the plotting that they're doing, that heist that they're going to do, is just going to be on hold for at least the next 6 weeks. I was like, okay, so this is where the pirates start. But the pirates don't start then. First, Locke and Jean have to be taught how to sail a boat, because they've never been at sea before. They've never been, you know, they're not doing it, and they have to pass themselves off as sea experts and things. And I'm just like, well, you can't learn to sail a boat in just 2 weeks before they're going to set off in 2 weeks or in a week or however long it's going to be. They've got a, you know, was it even 40 days? Anyway, they've got a long time to learn how to sail a boat. Long time as in it's going to take them a long time and they're going to be away from the main plot for a long time, but not a long enough time to actually be able to fake having, you know, be able to fake knowing what's, you know, what you're doing when you're sailing a ship, or not long enough to fake being able to sail a ship, or even being able to, you know, pretend to fake to able to learn a ship. And yet we get from about 33% of the book to about 50 something percent of the book of them learning to sail, and it's just tedious because I know that nothing is happening in this section to move the plot forward. And I know that either if they do learn to sail in that time and do learn to pass themselves off as sailors in that time, I know that the book is shit, but I know that they're not going to be able to do that. And so I know that we're just waiting for them to fail to be able to present themselves as sailing captains. And then, of course, they go to sea and they fail to present themselves as sailing captains and stuff happens and blah, blah, blah. And then we got all the pirate adventures. And yeah, then at about like 60% of the way through the book, the plot picks up again. But it's not the plot that I was actually wanting, or not the plot that I was, you know... I mean, it's now the plot that I was expecting. The pirate adventure begins, but it begins like 60% of the way through the book. And then there's this whole section all the way up until about 90 or 95% of the book. So like almost half of the book is taken up by this pirate adventure. And I was waiting for the pirate adventure to start. But once it does start, I'm just going, yeah, but there's this whole Ocean's 11 plot going over back over here. And why can't we, like, why aren't we just finishing off that story and then going over here? And then the pirate adventure, while fun enough, you know, Locke and Jean are doing some fun stuff and they meet interesting characters and they're, you know, it's a pirate adventure if you like that kind of stuff. And I guess I do, but it felt like really standard. Like, you know, they go on an adventure and they go through a storm and then there's a big monster and then there's some sirens and then they capture a ship without fighting them at all. They just give it and then they capture another ship that they have to fight. And then there's, you know, then they visit the pirate town and then there's a chase and then there's a you know, all the things that you've seen over and over again and read over and over again in any kind of pirate book, in any kind of nautical adventure, any movie that you've seen, there isn't really a whole, there's no new element that pops up. And I was like, okay, this is like a fantasy, you know, this is Pirates of the Caribbean plus fantasy. But then now we're coming to think of it, Pirates of the Caribbean, the first movie, did have fantasy. It did have the, you know, it did have the zombie pirates and magic, you know, and that's kind of standard with pirates as well, some magical pirates. But so it didn't really, while parts of the story were kind of interesting, there wasn't a whole lot, you know, there was nothing new capturing my attention. But worst of all the time that was happening, I was just thinking, well, why aren't we getting back, like, this is just a side, I know this is just a side adventure, it shouldn't take up 45% of the novel. And then in the last 5% of the novel, super rushed ending, and you know, they finish off the heist that they left 33% of the way through the book. And when it actually all comes to the end, I was just like, well, what did all that pirate adventure contribute to the plot for the first half of the book? And how did it move the characters on? And did it answer any of the questions that were set up in the first book? And, like, did it do anything? Why did they spend all that time at sea? And it's just nothing. Nothing happened at sea which meant anything. I mean, there was some character stuff going on, but, like, just from the stuff that I wanted from the book, I either want a good pirate adventure, which, you know, Locke and John did quite well in that pirate adventure. It could have been an interesting novel if that was a novel, but it just felt like a distraction from the main plot. All of the action, all of the real action was going on back in this other city that they were based in. Not Kamar, it's called, where did they go to? Tal'Varar. That's the other city. All of the interesting stuff and everything that important that happened at the end of the book took place in there. So I'm thinking, why didn't they just edit this down into two stories? Like, just have that first story and tell that first story. Like, we have these interludes all the time. Why couldn't the pirate adventure be an interlude, literally, like, and then they went here and spent 6 weeks there and then came back again and then on with the story? Because that's what happened other times. You know, they spend 2 years plotting this heist. And we don't get to see, we don't read everything that we're doing through that whole 2 years. We just, like, had the highlights as we went through. Like, and this person went to meet that person. So we have that scene. And then Locke went over to this other city to get this important thing made. And we get, you know, a little bit about that, the thing that they were doing over that other city, which was important, and then we skip back, so we skip over months and months at a time. Just why couldn't we have just had that interlude, pirate adventure, and we get one scene from the pirate adventure, and then they come back and take it over again, come back to the main plot, and then if we want to, we can just say, oh, and if you want to read that pirate adventure, here is a novella, or here is a whole novel of that pirate adventure, because they go into the pirate adventure and come out the other end, and nothing. I mean, of course, like I say, character stuff happens with Jean, not with Locke, because I told you before, Locke is kept, he's kept in this, he's in a kind of fake way held in this specific character moment in his life and hasn't moved on since the beginning of this book anyway, because, like I said, he did get over some stuff and he was injured and had to make himself better, but he kind of got back to the same person he was in the middle of the lives of Locke Lamar and hasn't moved on, whereas Jean has moved on. I think that's why Jean is the more interesting character. Let me keep going through my notes here because I did make a bit more. Okay, yeah, other story failings. To do my bidding, I will give you this poison. I will trick you into drinking this poison. And to make sure that you do what I say, I'm not going to give you the antidote to the poison until you do it. Now, I keep thinking, you know, I've read this a few times in stories, and you see it in books, in movies as well, books and movies and other things. It's like, okay, a poison, and I'll give you the antidote if I do what you want. This, I think, can work over the course of, like, you will die in the next 4 hours unless you do this, and then I'll, and if you get this antidote within the next 2 hours, you'll live. It kind of works over that, but not when it's like, ah, come back in 6 weeks' time. Now, I understand that in this book, it's a magical poison with a magical antidote, or like an alchemical, which is sort of like a scientific-y kind of magic thing. But it doesn't make it, I think it's not a satisfying way, and it's kind of a bit clunky that they keep having to just go around in circles and come back and get this antidote every 6 weeks. And it's just, like I said, it's not very satisfying. And I realized the reason it's not very satisfying is that Locke and Jean have nothing, they don't have interesting characters to that hold them to do anything, because they only work, their characters only work as a bromance. Like, here's Locke and Jean, and they always have to be together. And when they're not together, it's a bit weird that Locke is doing something without Jean, and Jean is doing something without Locke. And that's, you know, where quite a bit of the drama comes in, that Jean wants to go and have this other, you know, this, John's got a love interest over here, and Locke is jealous of that. And but it just goes to show that, like, if it was just like, hey, I'm going to hold on to Jean, and I'm going to use Jean as a prisoner, and Locke, you then have to go off and do this thing over there, otherwise we'll kill Jean, that would kind of have some hold over it. But then, yeah, it seems to be, like you say, that if it was just like, I'll pay you all of this money, but it says, oh, no, we don't steal money for the money, we steal it for the adventures, because that's what the kind of people, and I'd rather the motivation to go and do the bidding of this Archon, to go off in this pirate adventure, just because they're like, hey, yeah, this will be really fun, we'll go and spend some time at sea, and it could have been a fun adventure that way, or, oh, yeah, we want to do this just because it sounds interesting, or you pay us enough, and we can retire afterwards, yeah, great, we'll go off and do your bidding. But the whole poison thing, like, the whole motivations of to get Jean and Locke to do anything, one of the interludes I liked was Jean, they visit this other city, and Jean starts taking over the local crime scene, a bit like the Grey King did in the first novel. I was like, yeah, this is really cool. And then they move on. I was like, oh, I thought that would have been a really interesting story. And I thought that was going to be the location of the story and where everything was going to be set up. But it was just one little interlude and they moved on. I'd quite like to see Jean on his own a bit more, doing that kind of stuff, just going into a city and going, hey, I reckon I could take over like the Grey King. I reckon I could do that, and I'll do it in a kinder way, in a better way, but I reckon I could become a crime boss. Could have done that. What else have I got here? Yeah, I think those are the main problems with it, with the stuff. So the characters, I actually quite like a lot of the characters, but there are some flaws that I have. I mentioned this in the review that I listened to just earlier today of the first book, of The Lies of Locke Lamora. Everyone swears in the same bad language. There doesn't seem to be any differentiation between the characters and their quips and their bad language, and it would have been nice to have a bit like this. Thankfully, because I listened to this as an audiobook, and the audiobook narrator, whose name I don't have in front of me right now, to be honest, was very good, and he did bring out these different characters better than if I'd have just read them from the page, because I realised that a lot of the language was different, but because the narrator put on the different accents and the different voices, it works a lot more. Locke is still boring, that's my note here, and I said that the reason he's still boring is because we don't have those character moments. The love story that happens, or the love interest that happens between Jean and the lady he gets together with, could have been interesting, but it was very, very obvious. Like, every step along the way of their relationship felt like as soon as they met, I was like, well, this is going to be the love interest. And it would have been much nicer if, he didn't just immediately look at each other and, you know, let me put it this way. Their attraction seems to be that Jean is very good at fighting and knows the Lecanto. No, what's there's the name of the William Shakespeare, the playwright back in the day. And because he quotes some of that, and she's like, oh, I can also quote that. And he's good at fighting, and she's good at fighting. And I was like, well, that's okay. That's one combination that could work. But then later on, we meet this other pirate who also quotes that same guy, and is also a big guy and bruising. I'm just like, well, like, if you really like Jean, or if the thing that caught your eye was Jean at the beginning, the only dimension to your relationship seems to be that he can quote Shakespeare and is good with fighting, what about this other guy over here who's also good at fighting and can also quote Shakespeare? So it felt obvious, but then at the same time, or like partway through their relationship, something else came up, and I was just like, well, that would have been... And also, sex doesn't have to be loud to be meaningful. It felt like, again, it was a bit obvious. Oh, and now they're going to have sex, and it's going to be really loud, and everyone on the ship is going to hear them having sex. You're just like, yeah, it's not really funny. Like, the swearing seems more like 15-year-old swearing, and the sex seems to be like this weird, like, oh, no, we're going to have sex. And I thought just that whole relationship, or maybe if Locke had, like, had a... If Locke had been even remotely interested in the same person as Jean, and they could have vied for her interest, or maybe the two main female pirate characters, they could have been both interested in Jean, and both of them were vying for his interest, but it seemed a bit too self-contained, and the full story that happens between these two characters, yeah, just a little bit, a bit, like I say, a bit bland. The other thing, I just noticed, this feels like I'm really going down on this story. There are some good stuff in it. Like I say, there's some good action and the plots are good, but it's just so muddled. Also, the pirates are the good kind of pirates, friendly pirates, and they don't kill when they don't have to. And again, that felt like when I was saying before about these pirate the tropes of the pirate adventure, the high seas adventure. Like, oh no, we're good pirates. We only do this. But a lot of this time, in this book, it kind of failed. Like, what I liked about The Gentleman Bastards in the first book is that they really did just rob from the rich, and nobody ever got hurt because they're scammers. They don't use violence to get their way. Whereas in this book, it's just like, oh, what do we need to do? Well, I guess we need to... Well, let's just kill these hundreds of people. As long as Locke and Jean survive, it's okay if all of these other hundreds of people die. And I'm just like, oh, not really. Is it really? Like, they keep... Like, hundreds and hundreds of people die... I'm guessing, actually probably less than that, but you know, let's say dozens and dozens of people die just because Locke and Jean want to survive. Is that it? They're given this poison to make sure that it's like, how many lives are Locke and Jean worth when they're meant to be gentlemen and when they, you know, their lives, I don't know, like both of them seem happy to give their lives in some ways, but then in other times, their life is really important. Like, for example, Locke is like, oh, I need to make this grand gesture to make people respect me, so I will be the first one into battle. And it's like, well, does he respect his own life? Does he not want to die? Or is he okay at dying? Or, you know, like, what price does he put on his own life? Is the price he puts on his own life as, I will risk dying just to get some better reputation? Or is it, I will not risk dying, and these dozens or hundreds of other people have to die to make sure that I survive. Very strange, and there's other things like that. So, next up, a complaint that I had from the first book is that if someone is killed because of something you did, revenge for their death isn't a good or satisfying motivation for your character later on in the book. It's like, oh, this person died, and I will take revenge on you because of it. And I'm just like, yeah, but it was what you did, what is what killed that character in the first place. Other complaint from the first book, some of the magic in this book is by, okay, if they know your real name, your true name, I think it is, these Bonds Magi can control you. And of course, Locke Lamora's real name isn't Locke Lamora, even though he's the main character. But because all the writing is from this weird point of view, like it's very easy to not give away someone's secret if you never see things from inside your head, inside their head, if they're always at a one step removed. So in that first book, it's like, and then he whispered his real name into Jean's ear, and Jean's eyes went wide, and I was just like, well, you need to, like, for that to mean anything to us as people, except that, oh, he's actually going to be, you know, the son of a prince, or he's going to be, you know, the son of a god, or whatever's going to happen. I was just like, that's really annoying. And then in this book, there's some sirens, and everyone's hearing their own name being called in their head. It's like, ooh, Jean Tannen, come here, jump into the water. The water is cool. And Locke says, they're saying my name, but they're saying my real name. And Jean's eyes went wide. And it's just like, just tell that from, why don't we get that from Locke's point of view? You're like, intentionally and annoyingly keeping something a secret from us for no reason except that. And then at the end of the book, still don't know Locke's real name. And I just don't care, because what his name is now doesn't have any relationship to who he is. If who he was important up until he's 30, it should be more... You know, I don't know, it's a weird thing. Another thing is that Locke always has to be at the center of things. Like, the pirate town, he gets taken into a bar. He doesn't know the rules nor the goal of what's going on or anything that's happening. The pirate captains are all doing their own thing. And then Locke just joins in, and I'm just like, shut the fuck up. And other times, Locke just, he thinks, you know, I know that he's meant to be clever and he has all these different stories and different things, but there's twice in this book he goes to meet someone and is suddenly like, I'm sure I'll think of something to say to get me out of not dying. And he's just like, well, okay, I'll make it up as I go along. And he just says something and he's like, yeah, that'll do. And then he keeps talking. And I was thinking, well, he's had days to think of this cover story. Why is he thinking up now on the spot? Why is he relying on his quick thinking when him and Jean are normally so good at, you know, coming up with interesting stories? And then I'm thinking, well, how does he convince anything, like anyone to think anything? Like, I never understand, why isn't he killed immediately by everybody he ever comes in contact with him who is slightly more powerful than him? Like, for example, the Bonds Magi in the first book, if anyone fucks with the Bonds Magi, they all come down on the person who fucks with them. If one of them is killed, they all just come down like a ton of bricks. That's the whole point of the Bonds Magi. That's why they're so scary, that they all stick together and that they will fuck up anyone who even looks at them badly, certainly if anyone kills him. And that's what happens at the end of the first book, and I was like, oh, this is going to be great, because now for the rest of this trilogy, which I thought was a trilogy, Jean and Locke are going to have to avoid the Bonds Magi. They turn up right at the beginning and just don't kill him, and then there's this casino boss and he doesn't kill Locke, and I'm just like, and then there's the Archon, it doesn't kill him, and I was just thinking, and then the pirates turn up and I was just like, pirates, kill him, and the other sailors, just kill Locke, and then these, you know, the goes and visit the casino guy again, I'm just like, kill him, kill Locke, just kill him, and then the Archon again, I'm just like, kill, fucking kill it, this time just someone fucking kill Locke Lamora. That's the best thing for everyone to do. Hundreds of people won't die if Locke Lamora dies now. This is the best thing for everybody to do. Even though Locke Lamora is meant to be the good guy, he just causes trouble. He's a fuckhead. He's like, yeah, sure, he's meant to be a nice guy, but where Locke is trouble. The world would be better off without him. Just kill him. And in the end, like, dozens of other people are sacrificed just to keep him alive, and he's not worth being alive. Just kill him. Of course, I don't want him to die because he's the main character in a way. But then I'm just like, it just makes the story weaker when everybody who comes across him doesn't just kill him immediately. Everyone should just kill him. Just kill him. He needs to die. And it's obvious that he needs to die, but he always talks his way out of it. It's just like, don't let him talk his way. Obviously, he's bad. Obviously, he's not a good guy. Just kill him. Anyway. So, which brings me on. How long have I been doing this podcast now? 30 minutes. Let's see if I can wrap it up in the next few minutes. Yeah, so, some weird writing things, which kind of, I found a bit weird. It feels very modern, like, this is set in, like, this, you know, medieval or Renaissance fantasy world, but at one point they go, are you here on business or personal reasons? And I'm like, it's asking you, are you here for business or it feels like very 90s, it feels like, or like James Bond, are you here, hey Bond, are you here for business or personal? And he's like, both, because, you know, a good-looking hot babe walks past at that time, and he goes, I'm here for pleasure. Pleasure or business? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's business or personal. And it feels like, you know, you should have, like, a modern bureaucracy or, you know, immigration going through an airport or something, rather than someone just saying that. There's this one point in the book where something very important is going to happen. Very important character moment, very important action moment, very important everything moment. And suddenly we switch from, like, past tense to present tense. And it's not like Locke saw this and Locke did this and Jean did this. It's suddenly like Locke sees this happen. This person is picking up. And I was just like, at this point in the book, when it was read to me, it just took me out. And this was like a really important moment. And it felt like a fake way of making it more immediate. And instead, it made it not immediate, because then as the narrator was talking to me in present tense rather than in past tense, because past tense is the standard way of telling stories. Present tense makes it very tricky. You kind of got to get into the swing of a present tense story or text. You can't just click into it immediately in your brain. And I was, this whole time, what this important thing in the book was happening, I was being distracted by the present tense of the book. There are chapter numbers and section numbers within each chapter. There's different sections, and I realize, of course, when there's a number that's mentioned, it suddenly you'll hear someone blah 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 four blah 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 blah, and I understand that when it changes section, this sub chapter is switching to a different point of view within the book. Which when reading, you don't even see them. You just see kind of like a break in the page, and a break in the page is all you need to know that the viewpoint might be changing. Whereas, because this is an audiobook, it was a bit distracting sometimes, where it'll be blah 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 blah, and you get like two paragraphs, and then it'll go seven blah 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 blah, and in the end, I couldn't keep track of the numbers. And in fact, the numbers didn't mean anything. It's just whenever you heard a number out of the blue, it just meant change of point of view. And what else do I have here in my notes? Another writing thing. Yeah, Port and Starboard. This is my last note that I have here. Port and Starboard, because it's a fantasy book set in a secondary world, Starboard and Port isn't called Port isn't called Port, it's called Larboard. So Starboard and Larboard. And I think that's been made up for this book, but it kind of annoyed me in a way, because it felt like it was the only nautical term that had been changed. I mean, I'm recording this on a ship at the moment, and I do spend quite a lot of my time at sea, not on pirate ships, on cruise ships, but you do get a kind of feel for like the way that things happen on ships and kind of like the way that the personnel work and who reports to who. Now, that one of the most important things about nautical terms and any kind of communication, where people are shouting something from the other, in the modern day when someone radios from one person to the other, you want the different terms to sound as different as possible. That's why, you know, you get the NATO alphabet, or the phonetic alphabet, which goes Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. You know, none of the words, some of them have two syllables or three syllables or one syllable, but the point is that you never get two or the same series of sounds with only one letter different at the beginning. It would be really stupid if the phonetic alphabet went alpha, balpha, calpha, dalpha, alpha, you know. It doesn't work that way. You have to have, like, different parts. So, starboard and port. Port is when you go into a ship, you put the port side to the port. Why? Because the steering board, the rudder, isn't at the back of the ship. They used to stick down one side of the ship. So the steerboard, the starboard, was on one side, and you didn't want that bashing against the port, because then you couldn't, you know, control to get away from the port side. You know, port and starboard have got a long history, and they sound different because they have to sound different. It's like a evolutionary selection pressure of terminology on ships, that you don't want anything that sounds something like something else on a ship or in any kind of shouted communication. It's certainly not something which means the opposite of what you actually want. That's one of those things that people see in Titanic, the movie Titanic. Someone says hard starboard, and they swing the thing to port. They swing the wheel. Can't even think of the name. They turn the wheel to port, and you're like, well, they say hard to starboard, why are they turning it to port? It's because it used to be you would push the tiller across to the right, so you'd push it across to the port, and that would turn I'm getting confused here myself, but yeah, they changed it around because they had to make it clearer. They have to make everything as clear as possible. So unique arrangement of sounds within a word for easy communication when shouting across a ship, rather than larboard and starboard. And it felt like that was the only change of terminology, of nautical terminology, or the only change of nautical terminology that I noticed that was introduced by Scott Lynch. And he kind of misunderstood the entire purpose of why port and starboard sound so different, and why it isn't port and dort and starboard and larboard. Audiobook is good. You can check out the audiobook, audibletrial.com/SFBRP if you want to help out me and my audiobook listening and ebook reading and other costs associated with the SFBRP. It'd be really great if you check out audibletrial.com/SFBRP. You can sign up for a free trial, and if you do, I get some money. It's as simple as that. You don't have to continue your free trial after the end of a month, but you do get one of any of 200,000 different audiobooks that you can listen to. I probably wouldn't suggest this one. Read you could probably listen to The Lies of Loch Lomara. It's read by the same audiobook narrator, who was pretty good, except once again I didn't write down his name, and I'm not connected to the internet at the moment, so I can't see it. Will I continue on reading? I think if the Republic of Thieves gets some really good reviews over the next few weeks of people who've read it, I'll probably continue again. But I just think, I thought it was only going to be 3 books. I thought I was reading the middle of a trilogy, and it's 7 books. And this one took like six years to come out from the previous one. Like, if it's going to take 6 years between every book, and there's 7 of them, or 5 more, no, actually 4 more after the one that's come out, you're like, well, how long is it going to be? Is it going to be another 20 years to finish off the series? Maybe I just can't be bothered. I just don't think I think the tone of the first book is going to be so much like, oh, well, it feels just like Ocean's 11. It's like, well, wasn't Ocean 11 like from 2001? Actually, I don't know when it was from. But even the twist at the end of this is like, but I read that was in Ocean's 11. Like, that is what happens. Like, why are you doing this again? It feels a bit old. It feels a bit dated already. And of course, it is dated because it's from 2007. But even now, the Pirates of the Caribbean has run its course. The Ocean's 11 series has kind of run its course, I guess. I don't think there'll be another one. We need some new stuff. We need some new vibes. And I think that you kind of have to read these books as they come out. Otherwise, they'll feel dated. Republic of Thieves, what's it going to be about? You know, I don't know, but it might be pop culture of today. What else was I going to mention? Oh, yeah, I put a note at the stop. I watched the Man of Steel movie last night and thought it was pretty terrible. One thing that was a bit weird about it, that they also had these flashback bits, and then all the way through the movie, these flashbacks, and they're a bit like the interludes in this book, but then about halfway through, it was just like, okay, let's forget about character development. Let's just have somebody punching someone a lot. And then at the end, one last flashback, and that's it. And that's what felt, you know, after finishing off Red Seas and Red Skies, and then watching that movie, it's like, yeah, that was good. There was this interlude, there was this character stuff going on, you know, and then until about, you know, halfway through or just after halfway through, and then it's like, okay, tell you what, let's take a break from all of the interesting stuff. Let's take a break from all the character stuff. Let's take a break from all of the stuff that you actually thought you might like about the book, and then just have a big battle and then back to it at the end. And of course, there isn't city destruction in this book, but yeah, being taken away. I just want a pirate book, and I want an Ocean's 11 book. And in the first novel, I liked the way that the two sides of the story, where you had this political machinations going on in one time, and the underworld stuff going on there as well, and you had the heist going on, and they kind of felt like two stories woven together. And even though at the time I thought it was a little bit clumsy, because I was like, well, when this other person turns up, why doesn't Locke Lamora just get out of the city? Why does he entangle himself over there? Why doesn't he just leave? It would have been nice to have that a bit better, more artfully tied together. And this book felt worse than that. It really did feel just like, okay, there's something happening over here, there's something happening over there. One character is going to be in both places at the same time for no reason whatsoever. It's just that some other minor character thinks that person is going to be the best person for this job, and he obviously isn't the best person for the job. Again, it feels like, for experimental writing reason by Scott Lynch, he's like, oh, what if I have Ocean's 11 and Pirates at the same time? Pirates of the Caribbean, Ocean's 11 in the same movie. It's just like, no. And that's why in the end, I've got to give this book, I was thinking of giving it 2.5 stars, but I realized that actually if all I've done in a review is say the kind of things that I found disappointing and I didn't like about the book, I've probably got to give it 2 stars, because there's very little that I can say is like, the only thing I liked about it is, you know, some of the action is fun. Some of the characters are fun. The writing is okay. I mean, it's good. It's, you know, pretty good writing. The characters are fun, I guess, you know, there's fun stuff, but it's, again, it's just fluffy, it's just trivial, whereas the first book was fluffy and trivial and fun to read just by the way it was put together. There was never a time where I wasn't interested in what was going on. In this book, there were many times where I just wasn't interested in what was going on. The whole learning how to sail stuff, boring. The whole fights between the pirates, boring. You know, all of that kind of stuff, just boring. Just move on and just get things moving on, or get back to what was going on elsewhere. So yeah, there was a good like 25% of this novel where I was reading it just going, I really hope we get on with stuff soon. So that'll do for this review. 2 stars, I think that'll do. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. You can check out goodreads.com and find me on Goodreads. Oh, maybe I've actually, did I open the Goodreads page here for this book? No, I didn't. I thought I had done. I didn't open it, because then if you do that, I can see what you think about the novels that I'm reading. If you become my friend, like Lies of Locke Lamora and Red Sea Under Red Skies, I can just click on that and I can see what you think of The Republic of Thieves, which is coming up after this. So if you read that, stick a review on goodreads.com, and that's a really great way to do it. Another thing you can do on goodreads.com is join the SFBRP listener group. Someone said, I mentioned before, that if you mention there in the books I would like to see reviewed thread, or if you make a new thread saying Luke should read this book, and if other people chime in and say yes, I do think Luke should read that book, I'm more likely to read it if your recommendation is also backed up. For example, someone says What did it say here? I don't know. Anyway, someone mentioned Inverted World good point. Who's Inverted World? Oh, Christopher Priest. Yeah, Inverted World by Christopher Priest. And someone else said, yes, Inverted World is primo burrage bait and would make for a solid episode. And other people have requested it right there in the thread as well, and other times too. So I do have that as an audiobook. And I'll get to it in the next few weeks, I'm sure. So that's a great thing. Otherwise, you can email me, luke@juggler.net. I reply to every email that I get. If you've got a book that you've written or that you're trying to publish or that you're promoting in any way, don't bother sending me an email, because I 99.9999999% chance that I won't read your book, and I get many requests per week of people wanting me to review books, and I just don't have time nor the desire to do that kind of thing. I'll read what I want, as I want, when I want. Old books, new books,